He was my teacher. I can't think of anybody smarter, you know, so that's why it's always nice that anybody's doing anything for him who deserves it. I remember lengthy discussions about whether Elizabeth Taylor was really hairy all over, you know, like it would go on for hours and hours with Fred and Tom arguing about it. There was once a Life magazine piece on the Brando Julius Caesar film, and Brando was on the cover, and Life sponsored Doug Arthur's show. And when Tom was on the air, and Doug at the came in to ask Tom if would it be all right to talk about this cover story, because he wanted to know if there was any fucking in that play or not. And Tom was a wreck. He almost couldn't go on with his show. You know, it was a very funny, weird thing. Because Doug, do you remember what Doug was like? Very respected, but really not all that bright, you know. And so everybody else spent most of their time trying to break him up on the air, because he was sort of the number one personage of the station. We used to have to occasionally go to Big Bill's with Joe. It was a terrible strip joint that we would have to occasionally go to satisfy Joe, because there was a waitress there who looked like Doris Day, which knocked out Joe. And Tom and I would go there and break up while Joe sat and got juice looking at this waitress who looked like Doris Day. Tom always treated Joe sort of that way and called him punk. That's quite true. And always said that when he grew up, he had just found out about Florsheim shoes, and that was a symbol of great success for him. If he ever made enough money to buy those, he'd be okay. They were a strange group. He loved Adlai Stevenson. Then we all did. He was a wonderful kind of, vitally interested in everything. I imagine he still is. Very interested in politics and, I was very young when I met him, and in many ways he was a very major influence in my life. He read everything. And it was very nice to meet someone like that at my age. It was terrific to kind of be guided into doing things and reading things that maybe otherwise one would never do at that age. He was just so incredibly smart and so terribly interested in everything. I have him to thank for Catcher in the Rye. I remember that's when I knew him, and the book first came out, and he gave it to me to read, and it was like it opened a whole world for me. It was just an introduction to things that might have taken me a lot longer to discover on my own. So it was lovely to know him then. I met him in 1952, and he, as I say, he was my teacher, and he taught at a radio course at a rather bad acting school here, but he was just wonderful, and it was right around the corner from the station, and there was a bar next to the station called the Red Oak, and when the ball games would be on, he and I would go next door and sit in the Red Oak till there was a break when he had to go back. The game would just go on, but someone had to be there, you know, for the breaks and everything, and that was always a weird scene of having to run back to do it. But it was a very loose station then. It was 1400 block Walnut. And Joe was new to the station and very young. Well, Tom was really very young then, too. He was an enormous influence in my life. And he was funny and charming and the smartest person I'd ever met at that time. Perhaps still, yes. And I love him very much.
Hi, Tom. I guess I'm the last person you expected to hear from today. Me and Norman Radesky, Tom. Remember me from Normie's? Little bar over here on 8th Walnut where you and Niagara and them all used to come. Hey, Tom, I'll never forget the way you guys, mainly you, Tom, you used to make fun of old Doug Arthur, how he was getting on in years. Yeah, I remember one of the things you used to say was, old Doug Arthur comes in every day and first thing he does is check out what time it is in Hong Kong. You remember those clocks lined up there, Tom, huh? Hey, you know, Tom, sometimes the Red Benson and Mac McGuire and Jack Pyle, some of the guys from the other stations have come on over to the old place over the years, but it was hardly ever the same without you, Tom. We miss you. In fact, the old lady, remember Marge? Yeah, she still kind of smiles real warm-like when I mention your name or mention what a big success you've become. You know, Tom, but Marge is going through the change now. It's a little dreary around here sometimes, but Tom, old buddy, if old times mean anything to you, drop us all a note now and then, and the best of your family. You got married out there in Frisco. Hey, Tom, it's been a curse to you, buddy, and I hate to use this time to bug you about this, but I'm still scared being on this tape, you know, but if you ever get around to it, Tom, could you think you could maybe, you probably just forgot it, probably just slipped your mind. You think you could finally settle up that old bar tab there from the last 6 months there? I wouldn't mind closing out the books on you once and for all. But, you know, it's not no sweat if you can't do it. But thanks again, old buddy. It's a real happy birthday to you. Hey, I got to get off this phone now, Tom. Bud Breeze just walked into the place, and he wants a beer.
Yeah, I got to go now.
We're going to tell you, to the grooviest old man I ever had, Dynamite. I'm not going to say his age. He's much older than I, you know. Seriously. He is, really. You heard about that girl who had the baby when she was 5? That was me. Uh-huh. That was me. My, that was the egg truck. I was known as the egg wagon lady, the egg lady of Bucks County, lower Bucks County. Just tell Tom I love him, I wish him happy birthday, and I'm really sorry that he's too old because I was going to send him a motorcycle for his birthday.
Just tell him I'm going to marry Wilt Chamberlain so there'll be tall people in the family. And then I'm sick of him telling me that I'm short for a human but tall for a pygmy. If he ever says it again, I will, in the middle of the night, stab a knife in his heart. And that's about it. And then he's a very nice, well, he's an okay person. Nice guy. I've known Tom Donahue since I was 5 years old, and he's always told me, have embedded a paranoia in me. He used to tell me I was bought by the gypsies, left on his doorstep, and he's been trying to get rid of me ever since. And I believe it. Oh, I can see it now. And you have ads. I know Dick Clark saying, and I remember those great years when Tom Donahue, and he goes there, and get this 24-page booklet telling facts and figures of Tom Donahue's life. Tell him I hope he can fulfill his life dream of becoming a jockey, and I hope he can run in the Derby one of these days. If he works real hard, I know he can get to the top and become the top jockey in the country. Oh, no, 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 because I've done that frequently many times, and he's threatened to disown me, so I can't cop out and tell the age, but he's 500 at least.
I put up with a lot of shit from Tom Donahue. And I've gone through a lot of shit with Tom Donahue, and I've heard from Tom Donahue from top 40 to underground to every phase of radio in the business, and now I got to talk about Tom Donahue, who I think really is a fantastic cat. He's done a lot of good things for radio, and he's done a lot of good things for a lot of people, especially a lot of us promotion guys. And the one thing that I think it's absolutely incredible about Tom is one quote that he made that I use so very, very, very often, and that's when Bill Gavin has his annual awards every year, and he normally gives for the best promotion man plaque, and Tom Donahue said that his vote for the best promotion man in San Francisco should go to Sparky's Delivery Service, which I think is an absolutely fantastic piece of wit. And that's only just a little that Tom had to offer to all of his cats, because he's really a beautiful guy, and he's pioneered radio from top 40. He's pioneered underground radio, and all I have to say is happy birthday, Tom, and I love you. Love your Peter. The first Chubby Checker show at the Cow Palace. I mean, my dear. Well, I mean, it was, let's face it, it was Tom Donahue and I, and Bobby Mitchell, man, that we started the whole revolution to rock concerts in this whole area, in this whole Bay Area. And we had access to all the greatest promotions in the world. And we knew how to do it then. When I owned my distributing company with Bob Krasnow, can you imagine? Bob Krasnow, Pete Marino, and one of the skeletons in the closet was Mr. Donahue. But I won't tell the IRS. I promise I won't. And all that good dope that we used to have that used to go over the counter at Golden Hit Distributors, I mean, it used to be incredible. Oh, Christ. Well, I mean, shit, really, Tom. You know, you used to get a taste from us all the time from Golden Hit Distributors to play all our records on KYA. We were the only distributor in town that had 5 Sherrell records on top 40 at the same time. I mean, and, you know, I mean, there had to be a little hanky-panky someplace around there. And even though all these years, Tom, you think that I ripped you off, I really didn't rip you off. No kidding. If anybody ripped anybody off, you ripped me off. Because I had all the books, and I know. But even so, it was worth the experience, really. And all those things that we used to lay on you, you know, under the table, and all those refrigerators, and all those freezers, and those hi-fis, and all the carpeting in your house. And, you know, those are just little gratuity things that we used to give to you, only because we wanted our records played. And that was part of the game. Oh, yeah, he was a bastard, really. I mean, if you didn't do it, well, I mean, forget it, you know. He wouldn't even see you. So we just used to go in and just kneel and kiss his ring and bring our wares to him and have all our slaves bring all the jewels and just lay it upon him at his feet, and he used to be happy. Golden Hit Distributors, which was owned and operated by Pete Marino, Bob Krasnow, Tom Donahue. Oh, he was so silent, you didn't even know he was around. And it's probably the first Tom's heard about it out front, too. Okay, Tom, that should cook your goose for a while. That should put on a few more pounds. But he was beautiful because he was the only guy that went all over the country to try and collect on his records, but spent the money when he collected before he got back to San Francisco to give it to Mitchell. That's one of the skeletons in the closet. Oh, yes, and our buddy Harry Finn, man, he used to come out. Whenever he came out, the first thing he did was to give Tom Donahue a watch, Bob Mitchell a watch. Everybody at the top 40 stages, they got a watch. I think Tom ended up with about 50 watches, you know, from Harry Finford. And we'd always meet down at Maiden Lane and have about 500 drinks, and he'd say, Tom, I got a new record coming out. See what you can do. And he'd slip Tom another gold watch. Tom must had about 50 gold watches. Good old Harry Finfer. Those are the good old days. Jesus. But other than that, it's been really dull for 22 years. Bob Krasnow and Tom, they were really stoned, you know. And we just got a new album, and it was an album on nuns. And the whole album was a nun's album. And it was so stoned, they dug it. Krasnow bought 10,000 albums because Tom said it's going to be hit. And so we got stuck with 10,000 albums in the basement. Never sold a one. Tom didn't know anybody out here, and that's when we got together, and we had Cougar Productions, and I was putting on all the shows then, and so that's when we got together. I got together with Tom, and of course they had to be silent partners because of KYA. And even in the papers, when the Chronicle quoted me as saying, which was a ridiculous statement, that the first Chubby Checker show, I gave Tom and Mitchell a taste because they were giving me all free plugs on KYA. You know, I mean, that was ridiculous, really. He went crazy. He goes, look at this shit. I go, yeah, I know. Like, what are they saying, man? This is ridiculous. And why would I say something like that? You know? And he said, I don't know. I go, well, you know how the papers are, for crying out loud. Which I really didn't say it. But, I mean, they just put two and two together, you know, because we were getting all these mad plugs on KYA at the time.
Tom Donahue, as we all know and love him, or came to know and love him in Philadelphia, I think was epitomized by Bob Mitchell one morning on Wibbage when he was playing a Johnny Mathis record and broke into it with a bulletin. The Wibbage bulletin, blank, 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 and said, bulletin, bulletin, a huge white whale has been discovered in the middle of Levittown. Blank, 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 more details later on Wibbage. It was Tom Donahue sunning himself. He remembers the envelopes. So do I. In fact, I'll tell you what I really remember is the Ed Barsky envelopes. Those were the heavies. The Ed Barsky breakfasts were heavy. Let's see what else. The hops in Northeast Philly, where Tom used to go to the priest and say, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, pay me now, Father. And other trips. But I think the thing I most remember about Tom was the big white truck, man, that he used to haul the boxers around in. And if I remember correctly, he used to arrive at the station, and the door of the truck would open. He would enter the door, up the steps, and enter the door of Wibbage. Diane Denbo would look at him, knowing she'd have to park the car, and gracefully up the steps, and the steam would be on. And as he entered the door, the theme would just be over, and he would call for the mic, and the engineer would have the pot all the way up to full. And as Tom approached the microphone, he would lower the pot, and that was his first, that was his intro. And he always managed to get there at the very last, absolute last second. But we love him. We always have. I remember the time he was the only one that could break up Niagara. As a matter of fact, I remember the time he threw the, he used to open up the door to Niagara's studio as Niagara was standing there and throw a fucking E.T. in his back. And Niagara went down, still doing his record hop spot, because that was bread, man. And bread, is, that was it. But we all, you know, and I want to go on record by saying that Tom had absolutely nothing to do with firing High Lit. High did it himself. No, seriously, Tom, I don't know what to say about Tom. I think Rolling Stone really doesn't know the Tom Donahue we know. And I think it's better that way. It cost me 1 year of hit picks to get a job at Wibbage. I hope Nicholas Johnson doesn't hear this, but Roy Schwartz never knew what was going on, man. Ever. But the one story I do remember was the Joni James record that came in one day. It was an Ed Barsky record, man. So Tom gave it what was called extra consideration, which meant he might even play the B-side, man. And in this case, he played the A-side, and after the record was over, he said, Joni, I'm going to reserve my opinion on this record till we hear the other side. And he took the record and turned it over and played the other side. And after the other side was done, he said, Joni, after careful consideration, it is my humble opinion that you should seek other work. Tom, I want to wish you a very happy, because everybody loves you, man. I don't know what to tell you. I hope to see you soon. I'm so damn glad that I'm back in humanity again. I hope that I can get up there and see you soon, and I hope that nothing but the best and good health, and God bless. Ladies, telephone for television. WIBG Philadelphia. Tom Donahue is a hip Bishop Makarios. By the way, I do want to say one thing on the tape, and that is Tom Donahue is the only man ever to get bread on the Mormon Tabernacle Choir's record of Hallelujah. That's true, man. That's true. Teddy Kellum paid him to play that record. The only man in the world to ever get bread on a Mormon Tabernacle Choir, man. God forbid they should find out in Salt Lake.
Well, oddly enough, the two things I remember the best are not related to the music business. But the first time that I met Donahue was at a racetrack that I went to. Bobby Dale and Bob Mitchell and Tom had a box and a few horses. And they had a horse in this race. And they were really into it, man. And Tom had the binoculars, and Mitchell had half of the box torn apart from his knocking his foot up against it. And the horse gets all the way around, you know, and Bob's going, Tom, what's happening? Tom, what's going on there? He said, where is he? Where is he? And he said, he's fading in the middle of the pack. And the other is everybody couldn't understand how he was just so into horses, you know. Why are you so freaked out on horses? And he said, in this 350-pound frame, there's a 95-pound jockey dying for a mount. What is this for, man? Is this just for a swing view? Yeah, the first acid trip I took, and it was Donahue's second. And he came in, man, raring to go. And we were at that apartment that Abe and Tom had on the, what was it, number 10? Edgardo, number 10 Edgardo. And it started off lightly enough, you know, and everything was going great, and there were these little sugar cubes, man, with the blue tits on the top of them, and bango, let's go. And Abe, good old Abe, man, he had the ability of picking out the greatest looking barroom chicks, man, that you could ever run across in your life at. And he had this chick who I swear to God, she was picked right out of a sailor's bar, man. She had the great pearls around her neck, man, and these great thick fucking legs. And she was part of the cast, and her sister, who was about 14, who it was her first acid trip. Tom walks in, says, yeah, where's the acid? Where's the whole thing? Bam, we all hit it. Except the chick with the fat legs, who was going to be the guardian of the night. She was going to watch, make sure that no one got in, take the telephone calls. Everybody gets off, including this chick's sister, who starts dancing around the room and wanting to hear Greek music. And Tom's in there, and slowly I just saw him disappear, man. I didn't know what had happened to him, except this chick dancing around in the room, and the bar chick sitting there chopping on a kilo of grass, man. What a fucking room. So I walked to the bathroom, and as I walked by the bedroom, I looked in, and Tom was plastered to the wall. And I knew it wasn't me, man, because I wasn't that fucking scary, you know. But he looked like he was looking at God straight in the face. fuck.
Actually, the first place I met him was at a dog show in Bucks County. He was, me, this massive piece of blubber, taking my dog in the ring, and Tom was the judge. And it looked really weird. We kept seeing each other at the hot dog stand. he was buying hot dogs, and so was I. I suppose I was judged on the merits of the dog. But I think he probably judged it on the merits of my size and shape. He gave me best of breed, and I won the hound group, and then he dumped me for best in show. Never quite made it, you know. He never followed through. He had been in Wilmington, Delaware, and then he got the job at KYA, and he said, you want to come to California and get in the record industry? And I said, oh, Jesus Christ, that's great, you know. Showbiz, you know, big gold doors. And he says, how much am I going to make? He says, well, you'll make $150 a week and all you can steal. I said, well, what are you talking about? He says, well, when you come out, we'll show you. I came out, and there was this incredible dive on 6th Street. King Records. It was the biggest bring down of my life. You know, this is it? It was really a dump. Roaches everywhere. It's been the same ever since. Oh, pies. You know, ordering pies by the whole pieful and quarts of milk. Tom could sit down at a table and polish off a peach pie and a half gallon of milk faster than anybody I know. After having eaten, you know, a five-course meal. And then go to bed with the papers. I remember his bankruptcies. That was funny. I was talking about that today. Tom, I guess after Wibbage, in between San Francisco, he went bankrupt. I remember very clearly moving out all of their really great, incredible early American furniture from this farmhouse and going around to everybody and picking up pieces of junk and moving it back into the house. And they came and repossessed it, but it was all crap from the missions, you know, all the junk from junk stores. All the great stuff we moved out a couple of weeks before. I remember his old lady driving the car home one day coming back from the cleaners. She pulled it up in the driveway, got out, and they rolled down the hill into the swimming pool. I remember also, a great story. It used to snow like crazy in Bucks County, and Tom would come home on weekends. He used to stay in the city. Never changed much. He still does that. And he would come home on weekends, and all the pipes were frozen. So Grace and I spent about 3 hours defrosting the snow so that
Tom would have fresh water and that the toilets would be full because, you know, there was just no way to get water into the any of the facilities. We really waited on him hand and foot. It was, he had a wonderful life. Everybody was in service. It was fun. You know, we all did it. You know, we got a kick out of it. Then he broke his leg one time. The story that I heard was that he was coming out of somebody's house and he tripped and just fell. And then there was another version of the story, which is probably the more accurate version, that he was smashed out of his mind and fell down the steps. But I remember very clearly pushing him around in a wheelchair that didn't fit his frame for, I don't know, at least a month. Everywhere he went, I pushed him in the wheelchair. And that was kind of something to see, me pushing him all over San Francisco in this wheelchair. I don't know if you could use the story, but I remember one time driving to a dog show in Long Island with him, and it was Tom and I in one truck and his wife driving the station wagon in front of us. And we had all the dogs, and one of the dogs, you know, messed all over the truck. So Tom, you know, just slams on the brakes and jumps out of the truck because, like, he had all these dogs, but he couldn't stand their smell. So he goes running down the highway, you know, just to get away from it so he wouldn't throw up, and screaming at Grace to clean out the truck. And, of course, right away we went into service and cleaned out the truck. And I was standing behind Grace. Tom was, you know, way up the highway. You know, the smell was nowhere near him. And she was just trying very heavily to get that truck clean. And she turned around and just threw the newspaper full of dog shit and didn't see me, and it landed all over me. Hit me on the head, down the front of my clothes. It was just awful. Tom was, you know, gagging. But the funny part about it was that you had to be there, number one, but I was the only other person in the world that he could lend clothes to. I had to wear his clothes the rest of the weekend. Well, we laughed our asses off over that, and then Tom was on his knees, you know, and of course Grace and I, it was too funny to be mad, you know. I just rolled in the, on the ground. Grace just doubled up, and there was nothing we could do but just flip out. I talked to him last week, and he borrows my tuxedo periodically. I asked Bonnie to have him return it, so he called me, and he said, "Listen, Carl, you know, this tuxedo really is ours." He said, "So do you mind if I go to the expense of having some, you know, little embroidery done to it?" I said, "No, not at all, Tom. Go ahead. All I know is this tuxedo is going to come back looking great. Just looking incredible." I never wear it. You know, I'll never wear it again. But it'll be nice to have. I met my wife through Tom. Tom introduced me to my wife. Tom was bound and determined to have the Beach Boys headline one of the Cow Palace shows, and we had to get him for nothing, you know, for back dues. And, I mean, he just put pressure on everybody to get the Beach Boys for nothing. So we finally got him. And at the time, their price was like $1,500. By the time the show was over and the Beach Boys had appeared, it cost us $5,500 in just transportation and expenses. Remember, Phil Spector came up to lead the band, and Tom says, you know, "Go get Phil Spector. Get him the fuck out here. We need him right now." So I'm banging on the door, you know. "Tough guy. You know, I'll get him for you, Tom." He opens the door. He says, what do you want, you little motherfucker?" And slammed the door.
"Wish you a happy birthday. I want to thank you and our dear friend who's passed away, Bobby, for being the two guys that started me out in the business and started me on my downfall. And as I said before on the tape, I just want you to know that it was very difficult being Tom Donahue on all the airplanes I flew on, being Bob Mitchell on all the airplanes that I flew on when I was with Autumn, and also being Abe Tesh in the hotels that I stayed at. It's an experience I'll never forget, and, you know, and there are moments, you know, when I think about it and I just crack up. You have our respect, the respect of me and my family, and have many more happy birthdays."
First time I met Tom Donahue was sometime in the 1960s. I think I met him through Bobby Dale, and I've regretted it ever since. I've known Tom Donahue for like 15 years, and if anything, he's proof positive that
mediocrity can reach a level of great success. And I met him at a time when all the old farts of Top 40 radio were looking for new areas to conquer. And I guess I met him at a time when everybody was first taking their first acid trips. And I fell in love with him when I OD'd on acid one time at the beach, and have loved him ever since, and have been up and down with him, in and out at the beginnings of FM Underground Radio, both in San Francisco, down here in Los Angeles. And if there's anything I have ever regretted about knowing him, is the fact that whenever I've flown with him to New York or whenever on business, we've always had to take first class seats because he can't sit in a tourist seat, of course. I mean, we have to have a big one for him. And he drinks an awful lot of cognac. And his nose knows no end when it concerns, great flakes. In other words, man, I mean, he's done me in so many respects, both in intake and in size and everything else. But I love him a lot anyway. Happy birthday, Tom. God damn it, man. Any man can live this long. Considering the way you've lived, man, it's got to be good for another 50 or 55 years. 46? Oh, Tom, 92 easy.
Tom Donahue is big, whiskered, intelligent, deep. He was a mayor. He's a dog breeder. But I think of all the things about Tom and all his magnificent, huge mystique, is he has an incredible intelligence. Many, many nights in San Francisco, or rather I should say many, many mornings after night had become morning, Tom and I would go to various places in San Francisco, and I would just listen to Tom. Tom would get very quiet and very intense, and then he would turn on and say things that you love to hear. I never, ever spoke when Tom spoke because I thought maybe if I did, he would lose his train of thought and not continue. And I always considered Tom one of the great storytellers. I've been with Tom at radio stations, at racetracks, at dances and hops, and just downtown and just waiting for a cab by the Mark Hopkins Hotel. But I think to really know Tom Donahue, you had to be with him at 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 o'clock in the morning over a cup of coffee somewhere and just listen to Tom expound. It's an experience that you can't explain. You've had to been there. Happy birthday, Tom.
Tom, happy birthday. This is Joe Bergman, and I was just trying to remember, in fact, the first time that I ever saw you. Because when I went to work for Tempo, it was very funny because there were all these mysterious people who had to be permanently out of town, out of the country, or dead, according to who was on the telephone, such as the Inland Revenue or the Income Tax or these other very suspicious people. I think the sheriff came around once, and I had just arrived in America having been away for 10 years. And Tempo was like the first place that I landed, and I just thought this whole thing was just wonderful. That people could do these things and somehow still go on. And I don't know what you're doing now, Tom, but I just wish you very well and much love, and I hope I see you soon.
Tom, you've spanned several decades now with your ups and downs, but you've always been there in every sense of the word. And for me, all I can wish you on this birthday is as great an exuberance as I felt after your wedding to Rachel, when I went kaleidoscopically toppling into the Masonic Auditorium from the joys of your party. I wish you all that happiness on your third birthday here, at least your third life as we know it, for you've shared it, and now this inarticulate toaster will identify himself as being the magic dragon. It's Peter Yarrow, Tom, and happy birthday to you, and love to you very much.
One of my reminiscences of Tom, gee, they're hard to do on one foot, so to speak. There are so many of them. The most recent was when I was last at the boarding house in San Francisco, and John Wasserman did this vindictive bitchy review as only Wasserman can, and being a performer, there's no way that I couldn't respond to it without the ultimate insecurities that I have. Tom took me aside and grabbed me very paternally and very firmly and said, "Listen, man," he said, "you've got to wear that thing like a badge of honor in this city. People will love you for it." Another reminiscence that we had when Tom and Rachel and Judy and I were together quite often, and Tom was at our house in California, and we were all in a state not uncommon for us to be in. Judy and Rachel went off to the kitchen to cook some hamburger, I think is what they called it. And they brought it back into the room, and Tom and I had the hamburger, not wanting to hurt their feelings, though it didn't taste too good, so we left it outside. And we had been visited by these raccoons who kept on coming to the house all the time and kind of peering up against the window and being obnoxious as only really cute animals can be. And we left them the hamburger without telling the girls. But we could never get rid of these raccoons. And 3 days later, Tom said to me, "Did you notice those raccoons have never come back again?"
Happy birthday, Tom. It's Punchy. That's it.
There's one thing that I put high above friendship, and that is when someone could give me a piece of material that works. And Tom has given me the cantaloupe piece that has worked sensationally. And there's when you could get laughs from me on stage, you are worshipped forever. And I thank you for that, Tom.
Oh, well, I've had some of the greatest acid trips of my life with Donahue. In fact, the first time I ever took acid, I had gone up to Tom's house. And they had an apartment in the city. This was must have been in 64, I guess. And so Tom is in the, he was still married to Grace at the time, and he was in his bedroom putting away his shaving gear, and he looked at me and he says, "Bob, don't take it, man." He says, he had just taken his first acid tip the night before that. In other words, he wasn't even coming down yet. He was still pretty fucked up. He says, "Man, don't take it, man." He says, "Do not take it. No one needs that shit. I will never take it again. I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm going home, man." Well, we all know what happened after that. Another great one was one night we were during the Watts riots, actually. I was having a party for James Brown down here in L.A. And so I invited everybody, from New York, from San Francisco, and there must have been 40 people, and I put them all up at the Continental Hyatt House. And so Bobby Dale came down, and he and I dropped acid. And Tom was fucked up, man. Tom was with Rachel, and they had a suite downstairs from us. And Bobby and I had been kicked out of every room in the hotel by now. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we go and we knock on Tom's room. I figure that's our last resort, is to get into Donahue's room. He opens up the door, man, and he is so fucked up. His hair looked like Jimi Hendrix, and his body looked like, you know, some mad Russian or something. It was just bizarre, man. And we walk in, and Tom disappears. He leaves us sitting with Rachel. All of a sudden, the phone rings. It's Tom calling Rachel from his bedroom, you know, with a suite. And Tom is using the phone in the bedroom, calling Rachel, asking a bunch of weird questions. And then all of a sudden, I realize that Rachel's talking to Donahue in the bedroom. So I tell her, we'll have Tom come out. Tom comes out, and he's got a Bible under his hand. And his fucking face is so red, man, that, you know, just beet red. You know how you get when you're really hyper, you know. Beet red. And he starts reading from the Bible. Well, Dale and I, man, we're cracking up, and we can't believe it, you know? And ultimately, Donahue kicked us out of there with something like the Lord's Prayer or something. And that's, you know, that's Tom Donahue, man. What can I tell you? Let me tell you, that Bible story isn't that far out. Tom and I once had a thing that we were going to do. We were going to get one of these tents that they use in these small circuses. And we were going to get a bunch of, we were going to use the robes from that group. What the hell was the name of that group? It was on Delphi. These guys wore the dirtiest togas in the world. Shit, I can't remember the name of them. Anyway, we were going to get their togas, and we were going to get a blow-up tent. And I was going to send Tom on the road as a preacher in the Bible Belt, you know, with his beard and that voice. I mean, we were pretty fucked up when we were discussing this. But I thought we would have made $1 million, and Donnie, you agree with me. It was a $1 million idea. Unfortunately, we didn't do it. One night, Dale and I are driving down to that Round Motel in San Francisco. And there's a drive-in next door. And we were looking for Donahue. And so Dale says, and he says, one night we were going to wind up driving down to this motel looking for Tom. He Tom was living at the motel at the time. And he says, we're going to, he says, when we go to the drive-in, it's going to be an empty lot with Tom Donahue. With Tom in the car, dead. The only car will be, the only thing on the lot will be Tom in his car, dead from eating the drive-in. Now, I don't know if you remember what used to go on at that drive-in. Tom would have eaten knots and killed him. You know, he would have eaten the whole drive-in. We used to go over there, and Tom would have a dozen hamburgers, four chocolate malts, and a pie. But Tom is, you know, one of the unique characters of all time. I would say that Tom is one of the most unique, if not the most unique man I've ever known, because as fucked up as he is, which is very fucked up, he is one of the most brilliant conversationalists I've ever known. He's got a sense, there's only one thing bigger than his sense of humor, and that's his waistline, man. And he's just, you know, he's just, there's not enough you can say about good old Tom. I came to San Francisco in 58. Mitchell came out in late 59, I believe, and Tom came out in early 60. Tom was living in a hotel on Geary, let's see, was it Geary or Powell? It was on Geary and Powell, I think. I forget the name of the hotel. KY had a trade-out deal with him at the time. And at that time, it was a big roaring 20s thing in San Francisco. Every bar was like a roaring 20s type of bar. They used to have swings, and, you know, girls would be on the swings. And Tom knew every girl and her swing number personally. And he used to roam the streets of San Francisco. And everybody would say, hey, Tom, how are you, Tom? You know, everybody knew him within 3 weeks. You know, he was, he was an immediate smash in San Francisco. Donahue was responsible for, Mitchell was responsible for bringing him out here. He was the one who told Les Crane, you know, that he had to bring out Big Tom. And, you know, between him and Mitchell, they changed the entire radio in America. Tom Waller.